Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, I'm talking to Rob Grayson. Now, Rob is the kind of guy that, you know, I've crossed paths with dozens of times without ever meeting the guy. Yeah, we've worked at the same stations. And Rob is exactly the operations manager you want at your radio station when you're trying to figure out what's wrong and what's actually right. We got good stories coming up, especially about the Christmas transmitter. Next on TWRC.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support. Online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio. Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry. At angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support. Online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hi, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb from the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. So glad you could join us. We're here with episode number 659 of This Week in Radio Tech, and I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio. That's what we call it because they give me about an hour and a half off from my usual Thursday to do this show. That's my full-time employer, Telos Alliance, and I'm so delighted to be associated with them. Have been for 23 years now, and there's just awesome people there and make some cool stuff. In fact, we're gonna in a few episodes we're gonna take a tour of a new radio station that I built in Oxford, Mississippi. But that's not the topic today. Today's topic is a fellow broadcaster named Rob Grayson. We're going to bring him in just a minute, not just yet. I do have a little piece of sad news, and that is that Chris Tarr will not be joining us today. I hope he'll be back here next week, and he just couldn't make it with us today. So hopefully Chris, my co-host, my beloved co-host, will be back here next week. All right, well, I guess that's enough introduction from me. I'm in Nashville. It's a beautiful, hot summer day, a little bit cooler than it has been. Look at that, the temperature outside. It's 77 degrees. It's actually it's cooler outside than it is in my office today. So it's a beautiful, beautiful day. And speaking of beautiful day, let's go to this guy here, Rob Grayson, my friend from Facebook. And, you know, Rob, you and I have almost crossed paths numerous times, but never really worked at the same place at the same time. How you doing, Rob Grayson? Good to see you.
Just fine. Thank you. We've been that close to so many places along the way. We all know the same people in the same set of circumstances, but at different times. Obviously, I got the head start.
Well, you're a couple of years older than I, but not much. Oh my goodness, Rob, we titled the show "The Transmitter We Got for Christmas," and we're going to start with that story in a few minutes. But why don't you give us a little tease about this story before we head into our first commercial sponsor announcement? What's that about?
Before I could actually beg people to let me be on their radio station, I tried building my own little radio stations under the inspiration of my brother, who was able to do these things and actually understood how they work and all of that stuff. I came into it the other way, with the determination to make the thing work and run it until it doesn't anymore and then build another one. So that's about the size of it. We started with little bitty, we'll tell you the story. I'm going to tell you that story in a minute, so I'm going to wait for that. But that's the basic of it. I just built my own stuff and then coerced someone into saying, okay, we'll let you be on. Quit bugging us. This way, maybe you'll go home. You won't just hang around all the time.
And this must have been back in the, the late 60s or early 70s that you got this transmitter for Christmas?
I think Walt got his in the 60s. And my brother Walt, who's a longtime radio guy, longtime TV guy, and the most beloved man in central Mississippi for his TV work and everything, and the people who know him from that, he got it as a present. It was a GE, and it came in a plastic case. And I'm assuming there was some assembly required and all of that stuff. And I found out you could broadcast on this little transmitter and get it halfway across the yard, maybe all the way over to Birchler's store across the street if the wind was blowing right. And that just fascinated me. That was just the coolest thing. And time went on, there were other ones that we would get. He built an ICO FM kit and built it actually in a little aluminum mixer. He had it all integrated into one thing, and he got busy working and, you know, grew up and all of that stuff. So he gave it to me. I took the thing and hooked it to the flue of a gas heater that wasn't hooked up anymore. It's an old gas heater flue, and that was my antenna. And I got about a half a mile out of that.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I bet that did okay. Was it like a vertical flue, right? Went out to the roof?
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's totally the wrong design for an FM antenna, but you know, what did I know?
Well, this was FM.
That was FM. We will
get to all that right now. I got to remind you, our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Nautel, and Suncast has a little website to show you here. This is the Nautel and their HD radio products. And I know we've talked about this a couple of times because I'm just so amazed at what Nautel has engineered for HD radio. They've made some improvements to the original design of HD radio, at least in terms of transporting the HD signal from one place to another. On this webpage, this is on the Nautel.com website, and you go to the digital radio products and you can look this up. There's a box there called the HD Multicast Plus. This, of course, it contains code that's some of the approved Ubiquiti code to make HD radio happen. But they've also, they've put the import and the export into one box. And then the output of this box is what's called an E2X signal. And this means that you can put this box at your studio site. That's assuming that your transmitter is elsewhere, and get a fairly low bit rate, you know, a little over 100 kilobits per second signal, IP packet signal comes out of this and goes to your transmitter site. And it's pretty robust. And I've engineered now at a couple of stations that are using this. One of them is mine, although mine happens to be at the transmitter site. We were able just to put everything together. But if we didn't have our automation systems and our actual software audio console, if we didn't have them at the transmitter site, we would have that multicast Plus box at the studio, and we would have just a small signal, the 100 plus kilobits per second, going to the transmitter site to carry our HD1, HD2, HD3. Really cool setup that Nautel has engineered here, and it's just awesome. And then I've told you the story before last week about how we were able to take a Nautel VS2.5 FM transmitter that was 10 years old. And I had actually repaired it in the past and forgotten that I had repaired it because it was so long ago. It blew up a PA module from a lightning storm. And I replaced that. There's a video on YouTube you can find of me replacing that. I didn't have a good soldering gun, a big one with me. So I had to run to Walmart and buy a gas-fired soldering torch and replace the PA pallet. Well, 10 years later, this transmitter is available. We put it in Oxford, Mississippi. We do the couple jumper modification to make it ready for HD. We buy the FM HD Exciter that Nautel makes. It's on your screen right there. And add the multicast box, and bam, we're on the air with FM that sounds fabulous, and HD1, HD2, HD3. I mean, it was really an easy setup. So I'm just delighted that Nautel has this engineered. And you can find out all about it at the Nautel website, at Nautel.com. Every once in a while, check back there, and we'll try to make you aware of it, about their webinars, actually their Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussions. Jeff Welton is going to be on the road for a while, and I'll be meeting up with Jeff at a few locations. But as soon as those get back on the air, so to speak, we'll let you know about them, and you can register and attend their Transmission Talk Tuesday. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech, and thanks for making broadcasting easier, cooler, and better for us engineers. All right. Let's see here. It is Kirk Harnack and Rob Grayson on the Twirt this week. Rob, you and I have been friends on Facebook for a long time. As we mentioned, we haven't crossed paths at any broadcast stations yet, but you're now the program director at a radio station that I used to do engineering for back, 30 years ago. In the Memphis, Tennessee area. You're in Covington, Tennessee. Tell me about what you're doing there.
It's an interesting little thing. I was in radio forever and forever, and then got into studio engineering, working for a guy named Skip Wilkerson at Wilkerson Sound Studio, but kept kept my feet in doing part-time on-air stuff, this, that, and the other. But my main job was studio engineering. Over the course of time, as the internet came along and made so many things easy, it also took away things like duplication and whatever, because that's where the profit would be. And those things fell off when they said, I don't have to put this on a CD or a reel-to-reel. I can just email it and poof, it was gone. So I had started edging back into radio again, and I was going to do a little part-time production for a general manager I had worked for years ago who had bought the station in Covington. And in one of those weird situations that happens in this business, it seems the program director quit right before I started to walk in the door. I had been a PD at age 20 for this guy in Jackson, Mississippi that was the general manager, and he said, guess what? You're the PD. So that's how I became PD there. And it's a country station.
Yeah.
And I told him, I don't know anything about country music. He said, well, would you work for this small amount of money? And I said, yes. And he said, you're not. Oh,
this station, WKBL, is that it?
WKBL is the AM. WKBQ is the FM.
KBL and KBQ. Are they simulcast most of the time, or are they completely separate?
They don't do any simulcasting. The AM is an oldies station.
Okay.
A few years ago, I put together a format. I said, we're an AM station. So what I'm going to do is go find all of the AM or songs that were mixed to sound good on AM. So I started back at the beginning of top 40, mid 50s, and put together a format that had top 10 countdowns every hour of songs that were in the top 10 on this date, and took it all the way to the end of the 70s. I'm going 50s through 70s as oldies on this station, all hits. And well, what it sounded like kind of was music of your life that wasn't afraid of having a guitar solo. So that's how that format sounded. And it went along, but we changed ownership. They wanted to go in a different direction. How many times in my career have I heard, we want to go in a different direction? So
sure, there's one of those. Exactly.
Another one of those. So, but over the course of time, it has moved around to right now, it is kind of a 70s to 80s with a sprinkling of 90s is what we're doing on there. And we call it Cool KBL is what we're doing. And so that's what the AM is doing. The FM is doing today's country and the classics. So now when I came in as program director, I took a way broader interpretation of classics than the people had before me because they were way younger than me. So we'll play your Fast Car and we'll play all the hits and all of these things that are, but we'll also, I mean, I'll go all the way back. I'll go to Hank Sr. I'll go back to, you know, Webb Pierce and throw him in occasionally, you know, some of the pins that started country. We go on and we say, we are not ashamed of where country came from. Here it is. Listen. And I mix it in with everything else. So it has a wider variety than most of the single country stations. They usually focus one way or the other. So that's what I learned when I tried to learn to do a country station. And that's what we're doing now.
One of the things, Rob, that I like about being an engineer, a broadcast engineer, is, you know, everybody has an opinion on programming, whether you're an engineer, right, a program exactly director, a listener, the station secretary, the Herb Tarlick sales manager. Everybody has an opinion on right programming. And because engineers, I don't know, tend to, in many cases, live through a number of ownership changes, program director yes changes, format changes. Yes. I've been at stations through, you know, several changes, and many of you in the audience have. Sometimes an engineer's perspective is pretty darn interesting on station programming. Now, Rob, we should establish right away, do you consider yourself an engineer, a little bit of an engineer? You can follow directions. How do you place yourself in the broad context of broadcast engineering?
I'm an engineer wannabe. I always wanted to be an engineer. I learn and know enough to execute the things I have to execute.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm open to learning things, don't get me wrong, but the focus is on, as far as engineering goes, what I look at is we have really an engineer that if everything goes out the window, we can call this guy. And if it's over my head, he can come in and fix it. But my job is to make sure that everything is maintained to the point that we call him at minimum. And because he's a busy guy, he doesn't need to be bothered with little things that I can fix. And so there are things I can I have learned over the course of time, okay, make sure this meter doesn't go over this and make sure that this is set for this and use your ears. I can tell, oh my, that needs some fixing here and the other. Things you learn, you know, in engineering and in studio engineering over the course of time where you can tell with your ears, this needs to get taken care of, and I'll take care of those things, and I'll make sure that the automation is going to start a new day at the end of the day tomorrow, make sure the logs are right and there's nothing keeping them from running incorrectly and this, that, and the other. Little things that keep stuff coming out of the speakers. That's what I always say my job is to make sure that stuff comes out the speakers.
Now, I'll tell our audience, I think you're being a little bit humble, but I tell you, every broadcaster needs a person like you, Rob, someone who may not be the engineer, but who can do probably 70-80% of what the engineer can do, and you can communicate it effectively. You need that go-between between the very non-technical, everybody else at the station who has no idea how things are working or supposed to work, and then the engineer who honestly is not there day to day. He knows how the electronic stuff is supposed to work, but not necessarily is that person aware of how people use the gear. And I would just give my left arm if every station had somebody like you who was the perfect interface between knowing how to use the gear and how it's supposed to be used and when something isn't right. And you're very likely to be able to pinpoint at least the area where it's not right. And that is worth a lot to the station and to the contract engineer who's not there all the time.
I get to do that a good bit. Yeah, I do. I'll go back to tell this little story. I took my license test for my third class license when I was 14 years old. I'll bring everything that involves my brother Walt. My brother Walt gave me a ride down to Jackson where he was working. I came down from Greenville and the Delta to take my test in Jackson, and I bummed a ride from his station downtown to take the test. There's two guys. Mm-hmm. The guy that drove us was Gary Phillips, and the guy that went with me was a guy named Bob Pittman. Now, you may have heard of Bob.
I've heard of Bob Pittman. Oh, my gosh.
MTV, WNBC, AOL, all of these things. And, of course, iHeartRadio now. And I have to say that that was the last time in my life I ever actually saw Bob Pittman, was in the car to go take the test. Our paths diverged. But I got my, you know, big head from getting that at that age and said, I'm going to take my second class test next year. So I went back at 15 to take my second class test. And I guarantee you, at the end of they took my test paper and they passed it around among the graders, and they just tacked it up on the board and said, you want a good laugh? Look at this. So that kind of discouraged me from pursuing the direct getting into engineering thing at that time. Kind of overstepped, but I've learned, you know, that's the thing. I don't read fiction. I read stuff about this. I learn things that can help me keep radio on and keep sound coming out of the speakers and this, that, and the other thing. That's what I'm reading all the time. So
we're going to jump around here in this conversation, and I promise you we will get back to the transmitter we got for Christmas. That's going to be coming. So I do want to hear that story in its glory and entirety, about how your career was started and your life was ruined. I mean, made better by this gift. But let's chat for a second about the station you're at now, WKBL, WKBQ. And before the show started, you told me that you're replacing your transmitter. And I kind of went, I installed that FM transmitter in Covington, Tennessee many years ago. And I was so delighted to install it. It was a CCA FM transmitter manufactured in Fairburn, Georgia. And I love those G series transmitters. I just thought they were wonderful. And heavens forfend, you are replacing it with something. What? Well, Rob, it was perfect the day that I installed it. What could possibly be wrong 30 years later?
It's a good sounding box to this day. I have to tell you, I really enjoy it. We've got it tweaked just to the point, you know, it, once again, you get into your programming and you get into, well, I want it to do this. And I've got it right now set to where you can hear the snap on the snares and you can hear the boot on the kicks. And a lot of other fancy programmers don't do that. And it's, I like punch. But anyway, it's a very punchy sounding box. I like the way it sounds, but it has tubes. Tubes cost money. Tubes go out.
They do.
And that's been the biggest thing, bugaboo of the whole thing, is just keeping in tubes and all of that. And so I've got it. Let me see if I can I show you this picture. Can you see that picture? That's
New
transmitter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. That's a BE.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah. It says BE. It says BE on the front of it. If you look at the picture
I haven't seen it in person. This is our consulting engineer, Tom Nichols, has put this thing together.
Tom. And, oh, my goodness. I didn't know he was your engineer. Okay.
Tom Nichols. World, isn't it? Yeah.
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 We need to get Tom on the show. He's a good guy. Yeah. Tom does that FAA engineering. He checks and makes sure. ILS systems are properly aligned and things like that.
That's why I try to keep all of the engineering out of the up to date and going and all of that stuff, so I don't have to bug him, because he has to keep those planes in the air. So I don't want to waste his time.
Wow. Yeah. So you're replacing the CCA, which does it have? I guess it has two tubes. It's got a driver tube and the PA tube. Yeah.
Yeah, that is right. And it's a funny thing, because if you look on the plate in the back, it is a 5,000. And if you look on the plate that's on the front of it, it's a 4,000. So I don't know. I'm the only one who's ever noticed that before. But
we're going to break for a commercial here in a second. But I do want to make mention of a challenge that we ran into when we put the CCA transmitter in. And actually, the problem had pre-existed. This just gave us an opportunity to find the problem and solve it. And Rob, the problem was this. We noticed scanning the dial, the FM dial, we noticed that... What frequency is KBQ on?
93.5.
And what is the AM frequency there?
1250.
Well, if you take 93.5 and you subtract 1.25 megahertz, whatever that frequency is, that'd be 92.75. And if you add 1.25 megahertz, that's the AM frequency plus and minus the FM frequency. Yeah, the FM was putting out very nice signals on those frequencies in addition to 93.5.
How nice.
Yeah.
So see this huge copper tube that's hanging from the ceiling up there that probably was put in there to address some of that, wasn't it?
I don't recall that. Yeah. I recall getting some toroids. We didn't get them from Nautel, but and maybe some capacitors. Anyway, we found that the BNC cable that went from the audio processor, which I'm guessing at that time may have been an Orban Optimod 8000, whatever the processor was.
Still is. How about that? Or it's 8100 maybe.
That cable went over to wherever the exciter was, and that cable was enough of an antenna to pick up the AM station. And the input to the exciter was wideband enough to where that 1.25 megahertz signal getting in there in the exciter also modulated the exciter. I mean, you could turn the transmitter off. If you left the exciter on or run it into a dummy load, those spurs were still there. Those intermod products were still there. So we ended up just doing some whatever toroids, capacitors, bypassing, whatever, that cable. And probably we put a heck of a good bonding strap between the processor and the exciter, doing all that. And it seems like I had a spectrum analyzer at the time, and there were still a little tiny little bit of spur, but that was below the FCC requirement. And so we got the Intermod product down, but we were at 3 points on the dial there for a little while.
The AM is still very friendly to every piece of equipment there. Every piece of equipment likes that AM signal. Likes that. To this day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, AM is right. How far out the door is the AM tower to the studio?
To the studio, I guess it's a football field maybe from the tower to the studio.
Oh, it's that far? I don't recall it being that far. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's a Canadian football field, but maybe an American football field without the end zones, maybe.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow. Well, that brings back great engineering memories. And hey, we always like to have a learning moment. And so I told you how we solved that problem. Hey, we got to take a quick break. Broadcast Bionics is one of our sponsors on This Week in Radio Tech. They have this amazing little system called Camera One. Every station needs it. You need to put your jocks, tell them to put a little makeup on, look nice, come into work and look good, and stream a little video of what's going on in the studio. We're going to hear from Bionics. Be right back.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. Designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Adam GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
These guys at Broadcast Bionics, pretty amazing stuff. Camera One, and remember their virtual rack system that I've told you about a few times, and Dan McQuillan was on the show talking about too, to virtualize your broadcast infrastructure like your phone system, your Telos phone system, your audio consoles like we're using now at our stations in Oxford, Mississippi. Pretty cool stuff. Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Rob Grayson. We're taking a break from the heavy duty conversation and having a fun conversation with Rob. Rob Grayson grew up in Mississippi radio. And Rob, you know, right now might be a good time for you to regale us about this transmitter that we got for Christmas. And I don't think I ever got a transmitter for Christmas, but you did. I want to hear about this. Walt, and what became of things.
Yeah, my brother Walt got that at Christmas, and it put the bug into me to want to do similar things. So he had that one. He had the ICO FM kit that he put together that he gave to me, and I used it for a long time. Somewhere in high school, I started going down to the library, and I would look at their electronics books, and they had a big, thick book of electronic circuits. And I would always go, when I found something like that, I would flip over to the transmitters, the wireless microphones and things like that. And I found an FM circuit that used a Motorola HEP-802, which you couldn't just go down to Lafayette Electronics or Radio Shack and get. I had to go to an actual electronics store and order it. And I did, and I followed their diagram and using their schematic, put this thing together. And right around that was science fair time at school. And I somehow coerced that into being a science project. I don't know how. Somehow I convinced them, yeah, I built this transmitter. It's a science project. And so I was able to play my record through this transmitter, pick it up in a radio a little ways away. And it just, it amazed enough to the point that I won a trip to the district competition, which I was in Greenville. The district competition was 30 miles away in Indianola. And I went over to Indianola. I hooked everything up. I turned it on, and nothing worked. And that was, you know, great defeat. But I did get out of class for a day, so that was nice.
Huh.
Yeah, I wasn't sophisticated enough to fix the thing. I went over, by the way, and you were talking about props earlier. I went over and found these are. I'm gonna turn it this way. Where's the camera?
There you go.
This is.
Oh, what's that? That
is the first FM transmitter I found that gave stereo off of one chip. And I built
when
I ran a couple of D batteries or C batteries, whatever that is. So that was an FM transmitter, and I had built this was an AM. I don't have it unscrewed, so I can't show you, but it has a tube or two in it, and it was an AM transmitter.
What? Wow.
The emphasis. So evidently I kept doing these even though I was supposedly grown up and everything. I kept building these things for some reason. I know why I built them. I know exactly why I built them, is so I could run music while I was out in the yard cutting the grass, and I could listen to this before Spotify or anything like that. I could just run music over this and listen to it in my little headphones while I was cutting grass. So that's why I built those things. My brother Walt, let me tell you one about him real quick. Like I said, has always understood this way more than me. One of his hobbies is rebuilding old AM radios, and he has found that modification on an All-American 5 AM tube radio that you can turn a couple of things around and turn one of those into a transmitter. And that's what he does. He plays music on his little transmitter and goes out and cuts the yard at his house.
Wow. And you know, you're right. People used to do that. In fact, as little as 18, 20 years ago, a friend of mine who lives in Las Vegas, he got one of those Ramsey kits to put to broadcast FM, and he would do yard work or lay out by the pool and wear the little headphones with the built-in radio and play himself music that before we had Wi-Fi and streaming.
Exactly. Now that was, of course, in a little lull there was where no one was playing anything I wanted to hear on the radio right that minute, because I was aging myself out of any desirable demographics. So if I wanted to hear what I wanted to hear, I would have to play it myself. And that's what I did.
Hey, here's a question that a lot of us, I and people listening to this show, can identify with. When did you first hear a radio station describing itself as oldies or classic hits that you said, wait a minute, that's my music right there?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, in your 20s, that would not happen. In your 30s, it may not happen. I think I was in my probably late 30s when in Memphis, one of these Aero format stations came out.
Right.
And I thought, these aren't current hits. This is my music, but this isn't
oldies
current.
And goodies like for you, senior citizens. Yeah.
<That's right. laughs> What was the first station that you heard like that? You thought, oh, this is my music.
Well, of course, you know, I was more insider on it. So I knew these things were oldies probably.
Yeah,
but here, one of the philosophies that I've ever always had in doing an oldies radio station is never to use the word oldies. No,
really?
Just play the music. People hear the songs, they know what they are. You don't have to say, oh, you're old, aren't you? You just play the music, and they go, we'll enjoy this music, and you're not insulting anyone necessarily.
What now? So if you had an oldies formatted station, and I tell you what, I've mentioned a few times my new station in Oxford, Mississippi, and the FM and HD1, that is an alternative rock format, and amazingly, I like about half of what we play. I'm a little surprised that half of it, I think, you know, I can identify with. I actually know that song. Now, some of the newer stuff I don't identify with entirely, but I haven't wanted to reach up and twist the knob and turn it off or tune another station yet.
Right.
But our HD2 is oldies, and I'll tell you this oldies format, I love it. Business partner Larry Fuss is the guy who actually programs the oldies station. He's got a real talent for playing the songs that just make our head happy, right?
Cool.
Songs from the mostly from the 60s and 70s, a few from maybe the early 80s, but songs that you just want to go, yeah, I like that song. Mm-hmm. Like Build Me Up Buttercup, you know, and just toe-tapping happy oldie songs. Nothing that drags you down.
Exactly.
So we call it oldies, but if we were to rebrand it without using that dreaded word oldies, how should we think about branding it?
Well, the easy throwaway on that is classic hits, because that's not calling it oldies necessarily. But
classic hits.
The one that I was using, the format I was talking about, the AM station I did, I just called it the greatest hits of all time.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. You're writing these down. Good.
Well, there's this new acronym, new to old boomers like me, GOAT, yeah. Right? Greatest of all time.
Yes.
So exactly. Greatest hits of all time is still kind of GOAT.
Yeah, exactly.
GHOAT. Okay.
I would put the GOAT. A promo on that I would say that we at 1250 WKBL, we believe time travel still exists. It really does exist. All you have to do is listen, and within the next hour, you're going to hear a song that's going to put you in your mind at a specific place at a specific time. I say, and not every song is going to do this. You know this, I know this, but the next one might. So you steal that one. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
That's a good idea. No, classic hits, greatest hits of all time.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry, techies, if we're being too programming, but you know, hey.
Well, like I said, we've all got opinions on programming, and I love tuning into stations that one of the benefits of listening to the radio as opposed to something you choose on Spotify, or there's some YouTube channels that I really like that play songs that I like. And but on the radio, it's this nice space where you know what to expect. You don't know what order to expect it in, and sometimes you hear something unexpected that you hadn't thought about in a while. And so there, a well-programmed radio station to me is more enjoyable than a playlist I would pick.
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
because of that occasional surprise thing. I was just talking to radio station programmer John Holliday yesterday, and John programs our station in Hawaii, Star 94.3, and they're always playing a song that I like. I never want to tune away from it, and I always compliment John on that. John, how is it that you just, you know, how do you know what to play? And he says, some trade secrets, you know, mostly just go by the hits, but I got a couple of, there's some songs I won't play cause they bring you down and I won't play those.
Yeah. I'll run across, you know, I'll be listening and go, well, I don't want to hear that one again. And as soon as I get to the station, it goes in the hold file. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. That's kind of, you start out with this and then you start sculpting. Take this piece out, now, take this piece out till it looks like a radio station.
Now, nobody, no programmer and no engineer knows everything, right? We all find out new stuff from time to time.
Right.
I wonder how can a programmer be circumspect, just as how could an engineer be circumspect about not rejecting something that he doesn't know when, in fact, if you put it in the world of oldie songs or classic hits, it was a hit. I just didn't know about it. And that, you know, Rob, I came across that this week. I posted the song, I Gotta Get a Message to You. I didn't know the beat. I didn't know the Bee Gees did it. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
I knew it from Bobby Bluegrass Guy. I can't think of his name right now. I only heard it done in a bluegrass version. And then I found out 50 years earlier, the Bee Gees did it. Now, see, I would have rejected the Bee Gees version because I didn't know about it. And people said, well, duh, Kirk, you didn't know about that. 1968, come on. Should have known.
When
about
I
that.
Put together the oldies countdown format, which was the OCD format because of what it took to make everything rotate just right and have everything come up to where these top 10 songs came up that were on this date and all of this stuff. And the music changed every day because I would have to go through the charts that changed on that day and move things around so they'd be in the right place. So it became the Oldies Countdown OCD format is what it became. But when I put that together, my initial thought was I have to go into this with an open mind because a lot of these songs were hits. I don't necessarily want to hear them again ever in my life, but I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to put it out there and see, you know, if nobody complains, if everybody likes it, you know, or I'll pretend I really do research and say, if the research comes back right, you know, like I'm one of those genius research guys or something. But it's all instead gut, and I've got plenty of that, so, you know. But as I do, you put it all up there, and then you kind of see what works, what doesn't work, and you work your way from there.
You know, Justin, I'm drawing an analogy here, because music is easy to draw an analogy to. Hey, just because you haven't heard a song, or just because you don't like a song, doesn't mean other people don't like it. I'm sure there's a few songs that I just would rather not hear again. Yet most other people do like it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they used to tell us don't ever on air complain about a song. Now, of course, a lot of anti-hero DJs have made their living off of being sarcastic about everything in the world. But they said don't ever complain about a song on the air because it's somebody's favorite song or we wouldn't be playing it.
Good point. I got to tell you, Rob, there's a few that I just don't understand. Why was Surfin' Bird ever a hit? I just don't know. I could live the rest of my life, never hear Surfin' Bird, and I just, my life would be fine. I'd be just fine. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly.
But there's somebody that likes it.
One of the things I like to do is I'm the kind of guy that they made, if you remember, the instant radio station package that came out way back when. Where they would have a bunch of generic shouts and a bunch of generic jingles and a bunch of generic beds, and you would pay this amount and you have rights to use it. And I always want to be upfront and I don't want to use anything I can't use. So I paid that amount and I bought that package, and they would have jingles like WAAA, WBBB, WCCC, and you would have to take it in the production room and make it say the letters. You chop it up. And you use the bed and you use it creatively and chop it correctly to where you have your own jingles. And so I used that when I put together the countdown thing. They had the countdown stuff to work with. That helped me a lot on that. And then as changes would come along, we had a classic hits era we went through. We called it classic hits. And I actually sang the jingles myself because I work cheap.
Oh my gosh. What? You sang the jingles yourself.
I sang the jingles myself. There's still a slow jingle that's me singing on it. And, you know, you get in the production room, you just stack your voice. There was an old Beach Boys song, All Summer Long? Yeah. We've been having fun all summer long. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Sitting in my car outside their lawn. That one. I put together a joke jingle for Ron, Steve, and Karen. And Ron and Steve and Karen on my way. There's no better way to start your day. And I stacked the harmonies on it and all of that stuff and gave it to them as an unsolicited jingle. And bless their hearts, they actually played it.
Oh my gosh. Rob, I'm having a blast chatting with you here. I mean, you know, by the way, speaking of custom jingles and things like that, something I haven't heard yet, and I'm sure we're going to, is jock shouts done by artificial intelligence voices. That will be,
I can see that. I
can
see there being a market for that. Yeah. Can I tell you this one real quick? There's a couple of situations I ran into that. When I was at FM 100, I did weekends at FM 100, the most powerful FM station in the country. And I took the Ron Olson jock jingle, went into the production room and overdubbed, but great. Great, and made it Rob Grayson. So
instead of Rob Olson, Rob Grayson.
That's right. So because they sure weren't going to spend money to get a jingle for me, the weekend guy. So I used that on the air, and a while back I did a tribute to 68 WMPS Music Radio that's on the current WMPS, which is owned by Flynn Broadcasting. They wanted to go back and do a 70s type show for the weekends, and they we used the old WMPS jingles, and I found the Jock Shouts and was able to take probably Ron Jordan and Dan Wilson, and out of Ron Jordan and Dan Wilson, make it go Rob Grayson. So,
oh gosh,
I'm just a production fiend, is what I am.
Hey, we're talking to Rob Grayson, and Rob's a radio guy, just enough of an engineer to be either dangerous or helpful, and usually the latter. I'm Kirk Hardack on this one. Hey, our show is brought to you in part. I want to share this with Rob. This device from Innovonics, and our crack producer here, Suncast, is going to show you live this Innovonics device. Now, this is not a modulation monitor. This technically is a rebroadcast receiver, but this one is actually at one of my radio stations in Mississippi. This is in Cleveland, Mississippi, and Suncast has remoted into it using super secret credentials that I gave him. And as you can see, we got a whole list of presets of radio stations. I tell you what, for those of you who are engineers, and that's most of you in the audience, how many times have you gotten a complaint from one of your listeners or a staff member, but they don't seem to understand if the station is on or off the air, if it's a dead carrier, if there's no carrier, just what is the problem? And this receiver lets you hear your stations in a remote market. And let's see if Suncast, I don't know if he has the ability to punch up the audio here and let us hear it for a second. We're tuned in to WDTL. There you go. And I don't want to get a DMCA takedown here. So just the point is you can, even from your phone, from your smartphone, you can remote into this thing, even while you're driving, if you have to. And you can listen to stations in a remote market. And it just so happens that at this station, even though this facility that I have this located in, this Innovonics Aaron 650, even though it's not exactly centrally located, we've got a log periodic antenna on the STL tower, and we can pick up every one of our stations except one from this location. And so we even a 250 watt translator that is 45 miles away, we can pick up on this. We can get the RDS information. We can check and make sure everything's live, that it's looking good, that the modulation is reasonable. Again, it's not a mod monitor, but we do have meters that show that. And it's just amazing. I absolutely love this box from Innovonics. And frankly, I wish we had bought it years and years and years ago. And I tell you this just because, you know, some people look at Innovonics gear and they say, well, that looks handy, but maybe it's a little spendy. I tell you, it's worth it. It is absolutely worth it. Innovonics has a great selection of equipment, and you can check most of them out online at their website. Just look up Innovonics Broadcast and go to their website, and they have online demos from their factory. And it's California radio station, so their factories in California. Mod monitors, rebroadcast receivers, all kinds of equipment to check on the quality of your stream, make sure your streaming is going well. And you know Innovonics has been around for years. And that was actually the very first piece of broadcast gear I ever bought. When I was literally 19 years old, I bought a MAP II AM broadcast audio processor for a little AM station that I was the manager of when I was 19 years old, and loved it. Oh my goodness, that thing made our station sound so much better than what it was. Innovonics, amazing equipment, and I can just wholeheartedly recommend their Aaron series of rebroadcast receivers. We bought one for our Oxford, Mississippi stations that also picks up the HDs, and that gives us a great indication right away. Are the HDs on? Is there any kind of problem with them? It lets us listen to them. So check them out. And of course, if you want Innovonics gear, there's no better place to get it at all than Broadcasters General Store. BGS.cc is the website. You can buy all kinds of gear there, even television gear. They have a studio lighting. They have cameras. They have things for your radio studio. Hey, my employer, Telos Alliance, they got all the Telos Alliance gear the Telus VX, the Quasar consoles. They've got that new little Rave analog audio console. There's some, there's right there, some Comrex gear. Everything you need for your radio station, there's that Rave console, is available at Broadcasters General Store. Even better, you can just pick up your phone and call them, because they do phones really well, at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. Keep that number in your phone, in your Rolodex. Call them at BGS. Thanks a lot, Broadcaster General Store, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Rob Grayson is our guest, and we're just having fun talking about radio and a little bit of, go ahead.
Yeah. While you're on Innovonics, I'm going to hold this up to the... See if you can see this at all. It's too bright.
Oh, yeah. If you hold it up, let your camera adjust. Hold it right up there.
Adjust. Okay. One picture at a time. This is the WHBQ processing rack from 1976. This is before they had it in one nice little piece.
I've heard of that.
Here pointing at those three things are Innovonics right there that were in that chain. They had they had built their own multi-channel splitter and then ran it through processing music and voice separately. And three of those things were Innovonics things. So right there in that rack was the first Innovonics I ever ran across. It was funny because if you were on the air, you would run the music in the program channel and the voice all went in the audition channel and it would recombine. They'd be processed separately and they recombined and we all sounded like Dude Walker, whether we did or not. So,
do you remember who came up with that processing chain? Was that Chris Carb or was that before Chris Carb?
Bob Canner and then Chris Carb implemented it.
Out west. Okay.
Yeah. Because we were an RKO station. We were the farm team of all the RKO stations, and we all went to work at WHBQ thinking we would be the one that would wind up on KHJ one day. And I can think of a handful of guys who did, but I wasn't one of them. But Rick Dees in particular, of course, went out and started his Hollywood odyssey at KHJ.
I was going to say, WHBQ in Memphis, that's where Rick Dees worked there.
That is correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he there when he did Disco Duck?
He was at WMPS,
which was MPS. Doing
mornings, and he did Disco Duck, and he took off during ratings and went out to Hollywood to promote Disco Duck on Midnight Special. And the management at the station said, well, that's a violation of station policy. You took off during ratings. You're fired, which, of course, is what logic is this? Okay, you took off one day, so you'll be off forever now. And, of course, WHBQ, he was the number one in Memphis at that moment, and HBQ scooped him up and made him their number one and the linchpin of a whole wonderful staff of talented people and put HBQ way on up there. So, yeah, but that was, he did it in Memphis, recorded the song in Memphis.
Let's delve into a little engineering thing that I heard. Maybe you've heard a similar story about HBQ. They're a directional AM station. Aren't they 560? Is that their frequency?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
560 directional. Do you happen to remember how many towers HBQ has?
Five towers.
Five towers. Wow.
Directional day and night. And that's one of the weird situations I ran into in radio where there had to be an engineer on duty 24 hours a day, first class licensed engineer on duty 24 hours a day. Even when they relaxed the rules, they required a first class engineer, and that was a union engineering shop at that time.
And
a lot of stations will have the union engineer in there as the board op necessary, and the jock will be sitting over there as just an announcer. We didn't have that. We jocked our own board. But I remember at nights the engineer would be sitting in there reading a book and say, okay, it's meter reading time.
The reason I asked about their directional system, I heard that their directional system had been either engineered or perhaps re-engineered to be simplified, where they had a minimum amount of components in each antenna tuning unit and a minimum amount of components in the directional phaser, such that it reduced the Q of the circuitry so that it was more wide banded, giving better high frequency response. And it just sounded better. I don't know if it was Chris Carb or somebody else who was responsible for doing everything they could to simplify the directional pattern so that at some of the towers, they even got it down to just one coil and one capacitor at the base of some of these towers. Now, I may be exaggerating this, I don't know, but I heard the story that that array had been so optimized by simplification to get rid of as much as they possibly could and still meet their requirements for the directional array. Did you ever hear anything like that?
I hadn't heard those specifics, but they were a good sounding station, so they must have been fairly broadband, yes.
Yeah. Memphis was really famous for some radio back in the day. There was HBQ. There was also, you mentioned MPS. What was their frequency?
WMPS. They were 680 back then. And right. They had I think 10,000 watts day. 10,000 watt day, 5,000 watt night, I think. And they had an engineer that ran from the transmitter site out on Bingestown Road overnight. And he would be he wasn't necessarily an announcer, but he was the announcer. And it was, this is Harry Simpson with the best of WMPS. And he would play carded bits that people had put in there and stuff to run on the all night show and play them. But that was always the thing that kids said. If you hear Harry Simpson, you're out too late.
Now,
past your time.
Then there was another station in Memphis that that was part of radio history, and that was WREC.
Right.
What was that frequency?
600? That was 600, still is, yes, WREC, okay. And they were put on the air by, Hoyt Wooten.
Hoyt Wooten, yeah.
Hoyt Wooten didn't get a transmitter for Christmas, but he built one in his attic in Coldwater, Mississippi. And that I believe, KFNG was the call letters, and they were the first station, as far as I know, in Mississippi. Out of Coldwater, Mississippi. And once again, we're talking 1920s at best, and he built this thing himself. And they turned that into, they moved it to Whitehaven, which is in Tennessee, and then put their studios in the Peabody, where they also sold radios, once again, back in the 1920s, give or take. And that studio stayed there for a long time. And WREC would broadcast the big bands that played on the Peabody roof down the CBS network, because back then you could just flip a switch and you're running the network, you know, back in the way they did those things. And so they would run that show for live from the Peabody roof. And he was a genius. This dude was a genius, to say the least. I went out to the transmitter site where it is in Fraser, Tennessee, and it was just an amazing place to go. He had a big, was it an RCA? It was, I think it's similar to the one JDX had in Jackson back when, but it was the big, with the sliding door cabinets with the little slots, you know, where you would slide.
Oh, yeah.
The one I'm talking about. The old one. They had a wall size schematic on the back wall behind the transmitter. So if you're the engineer, you got the schematic blown up wall size right back there if you're looking for something. He had catty-cornered closets that held the tubes, the spare tubes, and they would be displayed in a glass case in the tube sockets. So you would see, okay, there's the ones I'm looking for right there. Boom, you got it right there. It's just an amazing place. He had at one point he had built a bomb shelter by his house in Whitehaven, and he kind of applied that concept to a point. He had a lead line shelter out at the transmitter in case something had ever gone that wrong back when. Uh-huh. And so it's just a fascinating place to go.
Wow. Yeah, I mentioned it a few minutes ago, but Memphis was just famous for AM radio. And I know plenty of cities have been and have famous things to say or to talk about. But wow, Memphis is just really something.
Now, Hoyt Wooten, if you were ever an engineer that worked for Hoyt Wooten, the story you would tell was he insisted that screws would always be aligned straight up and down with the slot because the collected
lead was that dust, Hoyt?
That was Hoyt Wooten.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Man. Memphis had other stations. I engineered for the bot station WCRV that was 50 kilowatts daytime at 640. So that sucker got out big time. Of course, there was WXSS. I don't know if that call letters are still there, but that was, I forget what the frequency was there. 50 kilowatts the tens, day.
10 something, yeah. Mm-hmm.
1060, 1080, 1030, something like
maybe.
That. Yeah. It may have been 1030.
DIA is 1070, so it's about 1030, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
Man.
And there's Art Gilliam Station. It's a local frequency.
W-L-O-K.
Class
1340.
W-L-O-K, yeah. But famous.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, there's been some fun radio done around this joint.
Rob, we're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to come, when we come back, we're going to want a tip of the week from Rob Grayson. So put together the best of your wisdom, Rob, and give it to us when we come back from our break. It's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm having fun here talking to Rob Grayson about radio. Rob grew up in Mississippi, Greenville, Mississippi area, but has worked all throughout the South at different stations. And he's in Covington, Tennessee now, WKBL and WKBQ. We've crossed paths, but never have worked in the same place at the same time. I'm not sure we'd get a lot done if we did work at the same place at the same time. Our show is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. And hey, Suncast, I just sent you a link to a picture. I don't know if you can get that sucker on or not, but I want to show you a couple things here. Oh, there it is. That's me at my stations in Oxford installing the headphone gizmo from Angry Audio. You drill a round hole, which is, you know, the easiest kind to drill, 2 3/4 inch diameter round hole, and you pop that headphone gizmo in there, and you have got, I didn't send any other links to a Suncast. You pop that in there, and the bezel of the top of this thing covers up the round hole. And so you get this beautiful finished product. Now, Suncast, if you come back to me, I put those headphone gizmos in for the guest positions, but the on-air jock, the guy sitting at the board, didn't really want something on top of the console. He wanted his headphone to be under the console. And so I bought one of these from Mike Dosh at Angry Audio, and we put that underneath the console table. And this is also a headphone. I'm sorry, the other one's a guest gizmo. This is the headphone gizmo. So the other one that I showed you, that's the guest gizmo. Well, this one's a headphone gizmo, and it's great. It's got headphone jacks here for both 1/4 inch and 3.5 millimeter. It's plenty loud. It's easy to wire because it uses the studio hub. So guess what? We came right out of the Axia X node, the analog X node, with a piece of Cat 5 cable. Click, click. And I did power it because it was the only one on that line. So I powered it with the 16-volt AC power adapter that comes with it. We screwed it in the bottom of the console with 3/4 inch drywall screws. Had that done in about, 40 seconds, maybe less, done with that. Plugged it in with a piece of Cat 5 cable. I think it was an 8-foot piece of Cat 5 cable, and bam, done. Used shielded cable because that's what you're supposed to use with Studio Hub, shielded cable. And if you don't believe me, just ask Catfish. He'll tell you. They have other models too, like this headphone amp, which comes in a Decora style. So if you want to use a standard box with a Decora cover or a faceplate, you can use that. It's also powered by Studio Hub's powering standard. That's pretty awesome. And there's other things that Studio Hub makes that are helpful to you. If you need to go from the minus 10 dB unbalanced to a balanced circuit, this is so easy. It's powered over the Cat 5 cable with Studio Hub power, and this will give you a balanced analog plus 4 audio from your minus 10 audio coming into it. And then also, if you need to convert analog to digital, you can do so with this adapter right here. And they have all kinds of adapters. Things to make your studio life easier. Rather than get yourselves ground loops and other problems, use the right stuff. It's easy to use from Studio Hub and from Angry Audio. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio. There's the website, angryaudio.com. All kinds of cool gadgets and gizmos and mic processors too. Check them all out. Hey, our show also is brought to you by my friends at Max Connect. And I building the station in Oxford, I swear I've used everything I talk about here on the show, from Inovonics to Axia, Omnia, and Max Connect. We built the transmitter site, and our fiber was literally a month getting installed there. So I pressed the MaxConnect box into service, put it at the transmitter site, and it worked great. Here's Gary Morrill to tell you more about it.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about MaxConnect, he told me that it worked great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using MaxConnect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. MaxConnect. Check it out.
MaxConnect on the web at MaxConnect. I know it's spelled funny. MaxConnect.com. And Josh Bone's MaxConnect group also performs plenty of engineering services. So if you've got a project you need done, give Josh Bone and his company a call, and they can take care of your project for you. Hooking up complicated remote control, the audio processing, STL services. In fact, Josh has a new STL, a line of STL transmitters and receivers that he's representing, and they're really cool. They're also web interface, 950 megahertz STL, only ones I've seen. So pretty cool stuff. Thanks a lot. All right, our final few minutes with Rob Grayson. Listen, if you're an engineer and you're looking for somebody smart to be at your studio to kind of help you out, fix little problems, and tell you what's really wrong before you make a trip to the site, Rob is your man. Rob, I'm going to give you a chance to give a tip of the week in just a minute, but I've got something I want to show first. I may have shown this a long time ago in the past, and I'm going to try to show this without revealing too many IP addresses. This, I have this running at my office all the time, and I'm sorry about the washed out brightness here. This is called MultiPing by Pingman Tools. MultiPing by Pingman Tools, and this shows me the ping time to lots of different sites that I take care of. Let me see if I can. I take care of more sites than I can fit on the screen here, but you can see some of the. You can almost tell which ones are served by fiber, because the ping time is very regular. The next one, though, this is served by a wireless ISP, so there's some missing pings, occasional missing packets. And then here's a couple that are five. See, this one here that's crazy. This is served by a 5G gateway from T-Mobile, and it's usually quite acceptable. Sometimes we do get some lost packets. But my point, though, MultiPing by Pingman Tools. This really helps me evaluate the quality of my internet service at lots of different sites. And if one of my sites go, hey, we don't have this, or hey, I'm having trouble getting into this or that, take a quick look at that. MultiPing by Pingman Tools, and I can right away see, well, yeah, you got a lot of packet loss there. Oh, guess what? Your internet's been off for 12 minutes. Let's call the provider and see what they say about it. So it's really interesting to see ping times go up and down, service become unavailable briefly or available. And if my own service at my office becomes bad, guess what? They all get bad because my pings aren't going out properly. I love it. It's a paid program. I forget how much I paid for it, maybe $50 or so. MultiPing by Pingman Tools. They do have a free version that'll ping, I believe, one site. You get a free trial on it, but I've really got my money's worth out of that product. Okay, that's my tip of the week. Rob Grayson, what have you got to share with our listeners?
As soon as you said, say something wise, everything drained.
Of course it did.
But I'll tell you this stupid piece of wisdom. If you're on location doing things and you carry spare 9-volt batteries, don't put them in your pocket with your change. Unless you want to.
I'm sorry. I got pulled away for 10 seconds by my phone ringing. I had to.
That's okay.
Pick up where you left off.
I said, if you're out on location doing something and you carried spare 9-volt batteries, don't put them in your pocket with your change.
Oh, no. Yes. Great advice.
Things we've learned the hard way.
And don't put them in
I've
the...
I've learned the hard way, yeah.
At your house, Rob, do you have one of those junk drawers where you just throw like batteries and dirty spoon here and there?
Is a junk drawer. It's any flat surface. Sorry to my wife. Any flat surface I have access to. Yeah. But yeah, junk drawers, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't throw things away. Because as soon as you throw it away, you need it.
Yeah, you'll need it. Yeah, yeah. You know, I still have a cable in my drawer of cables. I still have a cable that will let me hook my Nokia phone to a fax machine in case I have to do that someday.
You never know.
you never. And as soon as I throw it away, you know, somebody, you know, will come hobbling up the driveway and say, "Excuse me, sir, I have a Nokia phone and I need to send a fax."
Yeah.
Gosh. Mm-hmm. Rob, it's been a joy talking to you, man. I really appreciate catching up with you very much. Thank you.
And to you too. Thank you so much.
All righty. It's This Week in Radio Tech. Rob Grayson, Program Director, WKBL, WKBQ, has been our host. Rob has been involved here and there with engineering and a lot of radio station operations. And I would say that, you know, Rob's not looking for a job, but you want somebody like Rob to be in charge of operations at your station because your life will be so much better. All right. That is it for our show. We'll be back again next week with another terrific show, and we'll see you next week. Oh, big thanks to Suncast. Thank you, Suncast, for being on the ball and switching our show and being at the ready with our commercials and everything. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find other fine podcasts. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.